Dr. Stephen E. Jones, Emeritus Professor of Physics. Dr. Jones has published over 50 peer-reviewed scientific papers in established journals, including Scientific American and Nature. His PhD research was conducted at Stanford Linear Accelerator Center.
As I describe these results to scientists around the world, I had one scientist in America who told me, he said, you know, these results from a scientific point of view are very exciting. It's quite an adventure to see this these data come together and support this hypothesis of controlled demolition. He said, it's remarkable. I mean, it's such a hypothesis, it seems so far-fetched, and yet all the evidence is lining up. As he looked at it, he agreed that the case was compelling for controlled demolition. And then he said, but I'm sad for my country. And this is certainly an important issue. Still having trouble with the projector? Maybe I'll just, okay, let me just talk a little bit about my involvement and how I got started, which was in 2005, in April of, wow, we're starting to get it, great. And it was with the collapse of World Trade Center 7 that Richard has talked about and David. And I appreciate their eloquence. Now we have slides that we can look at. These are photographs through a microscope of these amazing red-gray chips that we found in the World Trade Center dust. We all saw that dust, this voluminous dust. Well, in the dust there are large numbers of these chips that looked like this red material. Initially, I thought, or early on, I thought that this might be paint chips, and we'll talk about that in a moment. We looked and analyzed very carefully four independently collected samples. The chain of custody is very well established, as described in our paper. In addition to what is in our peer-reviewed paper on the chain of custody question, we also have videotapes of the persons collecting this, testifying how they collected it, where they collected it, when they collected it, and how it came to the scientists on our team, not just to me, but to other scientists as well. These chips are seen in all four of these samples, and you see the pictures here from our paper. We did a consistency check, of course, and analyzed the elements present. It's actually a fairly simple structure in this red material, but a very important structure as you look at the chemical signature, which involves iron and oxygen, as well as aluminum and carbon. And notice there, well, there's no zinc in evidence. That becomes important in a moment. But this question, perhaps there's a prosaic explanation for these chips. Perhaps it is just paint, and in particular primer paint, which was applied to the World Trade Center steel, which has a red-orange color, similar to the color that we see here. So we finally found a sample of the primer paint. Now, as you, most of you know, over 99% of the steel in the World Trade Center buildings was quickly shipped to Asia and melted. It was recycled. This evidence from a crime scene was destroyed. Over the objection of many scientists and engineers, now, nevertheless, some of the steel has been preserved in memorials. This particular memorial is at Clarkson University in New York State. The fellow that put the monument together for the university was kind enough to go and to the monument and extract some of the paint off the surface. So this is actual primer paint then from the World Trade Center. And what we have is the analysis of the paint on the bottom plot. And for comparison, the analysis, the chemical the elemental signature for the red chip material on the top plot. You can see that they are distinctly different. The paint shows a very strong signal of zinc. There is no zinc in the red chip material. There are other differences that you can see. The calcium peak is enormous in the paint, for example. Now, when we look at the red material, this anomalous, now I can call it anomalous because it doesn't behave like paint, certainly very distinct from the primer paint actually used in the World Trade Center. So now we use a scanning electron microscope to get this remarkable image that appears in our paper, showing faceted grains of iron oxide and aluminum in the plates. If you look towards the center of this picture, you can see both plates and these faceted grains. And the gray material, it looks gray actually on this image from the electron microscope, is an organic. And you know, I have people say, well, maybe the buildings collapsed and then somehow you just formed this nanothermite material. Well, it turns out to be quite a bit more complicated than that because of the very ultra fine, this is at 50,000 power, we can finally see the plate-like structures containing aluminum and the faceted grains that are also very tiny, about 100 nanometers across. This is nanoscale. It's just hard to comprehend how difficult it is to reach that scale. And notice the uniformity, if you can see then, in the faceted iron oxide grains. Anyway, then you've got the organic mix, and my reaction as soon as someone says, well, maybe the buildings just fell, and you know, you've got iron oxide, which is rust, I agree, and aluminum in the buildings, and they come together and form nanothermite. My question is, yeah, well, where does all the organic material come from, and how do you get these all formed intimately combined in this mixture, and to get it to react rapidly as it does. In this plot, which is described in more detail in our paper, the blue curve shows the reaction of the red material from the World Trade Center. We did this with from all four samples. This is one of the samples. Notice that it goes to a high peak there in watts per gram. The red peak is from known nanothermite. This is from a paper published by Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory scientist there, which is just down the street, basically, here, not too far away. And this is a 2001 paper, meaning that they had worked on this, of course, for years prior to this. Both of these curves show a very high energy release in short times. And in fact, the red material from the World Trade Center, 7 years later, when we did the test, reacts more rapidly than known nanothermite. It's a very remarkable stuff. In the words of my colleague, Dr. Fair, it blows up. And this is from the World Trade Center dust, still blows up. Following the tests, these ignition tests in the DSC, we looked at the residue and we observed numerous iron-rich spheres, which Richard talked about, so prevalent in the dust. Now, these spheres were not present in the red material prior to ignition, but following ignition, they are present. This means, it doesn't just suggest, it means that there were very high temperatures present. And furthermore, we find iron oxide beforehand, I'll show you data on that in a moment, and we find elemental iron, that is, not enough oxygen to produce iron oxide after ignition. That means the iron is reduced in chemical terms, which means there was a thermite reaction. You know, no other way to reduce the iron and produce these spheres from this material, as we have observed and published in a peer-reviewed paper. Now here's some new data. Here are some new data. Transmission electron microscope data showing in the circle one of our iron oxide grains. The scale here is 100 nanometers, lower left-hand corner. So these are indeed very ultra-fine grains. We then look at the TEM electron diffraction pattern for this grain that was circled, and we see a very clear diffraction pattern, the bright points that you see here. By analyzing the lattice structure that is denoted by these, by this electron diffraction pattern, comparing with known elements. So here in this table, Dr. Ferrer is comparing the de-spacing in Angstrom's second column with the de-spacing in Angstrom's of iron oxide, Fe2O3. And we find a match, an exact match, showing that Fe2O3 is indeed a component of this red material from the World Trade Center dust, and these ultra-fine grains. And by the way, no elemental iron was found. It is present after the reaction. That's what you expect from the thermitic reaction, the production of iron from iron oxide. What happens is that the oxygen associated with the iron oxide transfers over, is taken by the aluminum, so that you form elemental iron. It's very a vigorous reaction, of course. My last slide. This is our paper. Dr. Niels Herrett is a first author, and he's doing a wonderful job of spreading the information about this science. This is a peer-reviewed paper in an established scientific journal. I want to emphasize that this paper has not yet been challenged in the literature, the peer-reviewed literature. In the Protocol of Science, the established protocol, we have published our findings. It took months to get this through peer review, I might say, but it has been published. And as David Griffin pointed out, it's receiving a great deal of attention in Europe. We're hoping that beginning with this conference, we'll get some attention in the media in the United States. Thank you.
You can receive the active thermitic materials paper in the lobby for a very small donation. So Dr. Jones and his small team of scientists have published this paper, and it is taking scientific circles by storm. Now, all of this evidence together points toward the World Trade Center in Building 7. It's all direct evidence of explosive destruction. Now, interestingly enough, fire can't account for any one of these 10 key characteristics, let alone all 10 of them. Not only that, we have FEMA documenting in the Appendix C of their BPAT report in May of 2002 the melting of steel. Again, fires can't melt steel, turning a solid girder into Swiss cheese, like this piece here. Interestingly enough, this is only one of two pieces of steel that were saved from the 40,000 tons of steel in World Trade Center 7. It was all, the rest of it was removed illegally, the destruction of evidence, before the report came out saying, hey, we don't know how this building came down. Our best hypothesis, fire, has only a low probability of occurrence. Let's look at the steel and see what happened. But it was all shipped to China by that time. Expert corroboration? Well, here's one of many. Danny Juenko, top European controlled demolitions expert, 27 years. He says, it starts from below. They've simply blown away the column. It's a controlled demolition. A team of experts did this. It's professional work, without a doubt. Do we have foreknowledge of the destruction? Plenty, and you'll see it in your DVD, but here's a sneak preview. Listen to these mysterious construction workers. Down, the building's about to blow up. How do they know that these 8 to 10 small fires are about to blow up the building? What's going on here? Well, you'll see that all of this
amounts, all of this direct evidence, along with data from the FEMA reports, whistleblowers, which you'll hear about in the DVD, the expert corroboration, foreknowledge of destruction. This is proof beyond a reasonable doubt of explosive controlled demolition. And I'm going to show you now the problems associated with the Twin Towers, because as clear as that evidence is for World Trade Center Building 7, the Twin Towers have even a far greater clarity in the evidence associated. Beginning with, is there a sudden onset of destruction at the base, not at the base, but at the point of jet plane impacts? After all, let's realize now, we're looking at deceptive controlled demolitions. You want to blame the collapse of this building on the fires and the planes? We're going to start these explosions, in this case, at the point of jet plane impacts. Whereupon we hear, and we will hear several examples, dozens and dozens and dozens in the DVD, of sounds and flashes of explosions heard and seen by witnesses, like these, 100 of them, recorded in October after 9/11, but we didn't know about this until August of 2005. Why? The city was holding this information. Finally, the New York Court State of Appeals required them to turn it over to the New York Times. What are these guys saying? 100 of them. Over 100. They actually shook my bones. Shortly before the first tower came down, I remember feeling the ground shaking, heard a terrible noise, and then debris just started flying everywhere. Somewhere around the middle of the World Trade Center, there was this orange and red flash coming out. Initially, just one flash, and then it kept popping all the way around the building. The building started to explode. Well, let's see what they might be talking about as we see a known controlled demolition on the left and the North Tower on the right. Is there any similarity in the upper part of the North Tower to a known controlled demolition? Enough to warrant an investigation into the possible use of explosives, perhaps. That's when I saw the building coming down. Pop, pop, pop. I heard that freaking noise. I saw a number of brief light sources being emitted from inside the building between floors 10 and 15. You actually heard the pops. You know, you heard the pops of the building. Each popping sound, initially an orange, and then a red flash came out of the building. And then it would go around the building on all four sides. Let's look at the South Tower, see if there's any similarity to a known controlled demolition occurring on the left, where the demolition sequence is occurring in the middle of the building. You don't always have to start at the bottom. I saw a flash, flash, flash. Then it looked like the building came down. I thought the terrorists planted explosives somewhere in the building. That's how loud it was. A crackling explosive. Let's listen to these gentlemen. At this time, I would like to introduce to you a very special gentleman and friend of mine. A firefighter and paramedic of 22 years and founder of Firefighters for 9/11 Truth, claiming now 116 firefighters on the petition, Mr. Eric Lawyer.
Thank you very much. Like Richard said, my name is Eric Lawyer, and I founded the Firefighters for 9/11 Truth after I watched Richard in one of his presentations, and I realized that something more had to be done. And I just want to thank Richard for everything he's doing here. And the Firefighters for 9/11 Truth strongly support Richard Gage and all the architects and engineers that have the courage to sign that petition. And I know from personal experience, there's about five times as many out there that believe what we believe but don't have the courage to sign it. So what I'm hoping today is that people will find the courage after listening to this presentation and seeing everybody here and seeing that we are behind it. We also demand an investigation that follows the national standards and has contempt and subpoena powers. 9/11 was the greatest loss of life and property damage in U.S. fire history. This should have been the most protected, preserved, over-tested, and thorough investigation of a crime scene in world history. Sadly, it was not. What was it? Well, we know from their own admission the majority of the evidence was destroyed. I, like Richard said, 22 years of experience, I've seen a lot of crime scenes, I've never seen anything like this in my life. I was out of the site, I saw trucks leaving faster than, you know, anywhere I've ever seen, but I accepted it at the time, and for years I accepted it, because it was a recovery and rescue operation, and that's normal to have something like that going. Again, we've never seen anything like it, but that was expected. What I didn't know for years, what was going on behind the scenes, was that evidence was being destroyed when it was shipped off. By their own admission, Tower 7 investigation, this investigation of Tower 7 had no physical evidence. How do you investigate a crime when you've destroyed all the evidence? It doesn't make sense. They also admit that they refused to test explosives, or to test for explosives, or residue of thermite. Now, this is what I'm going to go into here just real quickly. There are national standards for an investigation. That's what all of us are asking for, an investigation that follows national standards and holds people accountable. This manual right here, just so you can see it, is what we call the kind of the Fire Investigation 101. This is the most basic fire investigation manual there. This is for the 2001 edition. This is what should have been referred to, at least. It doesn't have to be followed exactly, but it should have been used as a guideline for the investigation. I'm just going to cover a few of the things that are in here. So NIST violated, and the initial investigators that did not protect the scene violated the most basic of the guidelines. And I'm going to cover five of them here. One is the NFPA 9.3.6. It covers spoliation of evidence. What it reads is, once evidence has been removed from the scene, it should be maintained and not destroyed or altered until the investigation is complete. The steel was melted down prior to the investigation. We know that from their own admission. This is no conspiracy theory stuff. 19.2.4, exotic accelerants. If on the scene you find melted steel or concrete, you should consider the use of exotic accelerants. And they specifically say in the manual, thermite mixtures produce exceedingly hot fires that can account for melted steel and concrete. It also says they leave residues that can be tested for visually and chemically identifiable. Again, they did not test for it. And just put in perspective, on a routine house fire, if we suspect even the slightest use of an accelerant, we're going to test for it when there's no fatalities, when there's very little property damage. So to not do it on this, there is absolutely no excuse. I can't drive that point home enough. 18.15 is analyze fuel source. All available fuel sources should be considered and eliminated until one fuel can be identified as meeting all the physical damage criteria. For example, If you find pulverized concrete, which we all know there was in all three buildings, there was pulverized concrete, the only fuels that can create seeded explosions should be considered. So they shouldn't be considering fires. They shouldn't be doing that. It doesn't account for pulverized concrete. They should only be considering exotic accelerants and explosives. 19.4.8.2.6, extremism. The terrorist may include fires, but one of a variety of weapons, along with explosives, used in furthering his or her goal. We know they used them in 93. Why would we not test for them now? There was reports that day, multiple reports, which I'll get into in a second. So they could have put them in the basement. How do we know that unless we test for it? I mean, even if it is the terrorists that they claim they are, we need to test this. 14.3, preservation of the fire scene and physical evidence. We find the following. The cause of the fire explosion is not known until near the end of the investigation. The entire fire scene should be considered physical evidence and should be protected and preserved. It's just over and over. There's so many. You can go to our website, Firefighters Trial and Truth. We have many more of these actual chapters that cover what they should have done that they did not do. So now, by their own admission, in all three building collapses, NIST refused to test to physically test, like Dr. Stephen Jones did, for explosives. This is just unbelievable. And here are their excuses, and I quote, "It is unlikely that 100 pounds of thermite or more could have been carried into World Trade Center 7 and placed around columns without being detected, either prior to September 11th or during that day." So again, I've been on a lot of fire scenes, and I've seen a lot of investigations, and why would we not test it? Because something's hard to do. That's the exact reason you need to investigate it. That was hard to do. Number two, NIST excuse. In addition, no blast sounds were heard on the audio tracks or the video recordings during the collapse of World Trade Center 7 or reported by witnesses. That's one of the excuses why they didn't test. Well, apparently they didn't read Chapter 18. 18 is the general definition of explosions. Although an explosion is almost always accompanied by the production of a loud noise, the noise itself is not, in big bold letters, an essential element in the definition of an explosion. The generation and violent escape of gases are the primary criteria of an explosion. So that alone says they should have tested for it. But then we also, the NIST has lied, and we can prove it. And as soon as the new investigation happens, you're going to, the evidence is out there for you to see right now. We have 118 first responders who reported explosions. We have the radio transmissions from FDNY members that are still reported today that reported explosions. We have audio recordings. We have video recordings. I've personally talked to witnesses that heard them. So there's nothing short of saying they lied, and they need to be held accountable. And besides that, like I said, there's no excuse for not testing for explosives. And so at the very least, at the very best, even if you want to believe the official story, this was the most incompetent investigation of all time. And I've talked to a lot of investigators that were there, and I asked them the specific question, why did they refuse to test? They weren't the ones who refused, but NIST did. And they said, all we can say, you know, all they can answer is incompetence, or they tell me to shut up. They cannot give me any reason that follows national standards. So, but the reality, after, you know, all the research everybody here and the incredible people we're in the room with today have done, the reality is it was a criminal investigation to cover up the crime. So. Retired, decorated FDNY lieutenant. Anyone who knows the fire service, he is a stud. He worked on a ladder company 26, rescue company 3, rescue company 1 in his career. Anyone who knows, those are amazing companies. Here's his comment. Trade Tower 7 by itself is the smoking gun. Not hit by an aircraft with only a few relatively small fires, it came down in a classic crimp and implosion, going straight into its basement. Something only very precise demolitions can accomplish, which takes days, if not weeks, to prepare. The 9/11 Commission didn't even mention it, and FEMA actually stated they didn't know why it collapsed and left it at that. Brothers, I know that the above implications are hard, almost unthinkable, but the official explanation is utter nonsense, and 343 of our murdered brothers are crying out for justice.
Yeah!
Mr. Eric Lloyd, firefighters for 9/11 truth. Oh my God, where will it end?